Attention Crossrim shoppers. The store is now closed. If you were unable to make your final purchases and grab a Crossrim, Deep Peaks, or Hug a Reitman shirt, we've got you covered. Just drop us a direct message and a representative from our staff will be happy to accommodate your needs. Thank you for shopping the Paranormal Shop and have a nice afterlife.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossrim. This is your host, Troy. Nice to see you. This week on the show, we're going to be talking about loose ends, things now that we've seen Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, we're still curious about. Plot things that, story-wise, we would like to explore in the future, or we hope that Ghost Corps explores in the future. What do you got? See if they match up. Stay tuned.
Still Playing with Toys presents the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Crossrim, the biggest podcast since 1909.
So great!
News, interviews, and commentary on everything Ghostbusters.
Are you the key master?
Here are your hosts, Troy Benjamin and Chris Stewart.
Weird name. Gotta make the best of that.
You know, it's just occurred to me, we really haven't had a completely successful test of this equipment.
We went... very close to where they work too, right around the corner at on the UBC campus. There was the Biodiversity Museum, and they had today is open house day, so we went to go pop in and have a look. And 2,200,000 samples, like taxidermied, preserved skulls, fossils, you name it. 2.2 million, which made it was pretty flippin' huge. And then they had a lab at the back, like that was open, that you could wash your hands and then like touch some of the items and all this. And I get there and I'm like, approximately what percentage of the Earth's biodiversity do you think the collection represents? And they're like, I'm like, oop, sorry, I asked. And then we wander around some more, and I'm like, what's the oldest item you have in the collection? And they're like, well, that would...
Somebody's radioing in, get this guy out of here.
Well, I asked because right up at the front, there's a section where it's like... It's the meme taxidermy, basically. It's like an armadillo... But whoever put them together, pieces are falling off and all that. Or they have like a snake, but they didn't know how to like make a snake body look right. So it's kind of like a snake lamp. Like it's really... So this other woman came in and I asked her and she's like, ooh, I don't really know specifically. But she's like, but if you look up at the front, and I'm like, yeah, I saw those once. And she's like, those are probably the oldest because I believe those were from the Victorian era. I'm like, okay, good enough. I'll take it and go. And I'm like, UBC wasn't around then, so that must have been acquired. She's like, nah, you know, somebody passes away and it handed it off to UBC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Victorians in their collections of certain people.
Of Reginald McWeirdo.
Esquire. Throw some respect on Reginald McWeirdo's name, you.
Reginald McWeirdo, the third Esquire, passed away and handed off his misshapen penguin collection to University of British Columbia. So
that's that's far more educational and philanthropic than. We were watching the new Conan O'Brien Must Go show right before this.
I do want to see that.
My question was not what is the oldest specimen that you have? My question was like, was that really Werner Herzog or was that Flula doing his Werner Herzog impression? I'm not sure.
Did you see him on Hot Ones?
I've seen clips. I've been that guy where I've seen like bits and pieces of it, but I haven't watched the whole thing yet. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're here to talk about Ghostbusters. We can talk about Fallout and Conan O'Brien Must Go and the UBC's biodiversity collection. at a certain point, that's probably what we will talk about on the podcast, to be completely honest. But that's
probably totally
No, we are here to talk about to the Ghostbusters stuff. We're not going to get into any news. Again, there's really not that much really big, interesting news. I think the one thing that's kind of like looming over us right now is I saw that Dune 2 is available for VOD premiere purchase now. So knowing that Dune came out the week before Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I have a feeling we're going to start to see some home video on demand, whatever, $29.99 purchases coming up in the next week or so. But that should be fun.
That's what they charge us in Canada, but that'd be like, I don't know, $23 American. You guys are getting ripped off.
It's usually like in the $20 range, $20, $25 range for the you know, pre home video release of whatever it might be. Still it's cheaper than a ticket on a regular Thursday.
It's that wonderful combination of you can buy it to own it for whatever, $27, or you can rent it for $24. It's like,
That $3. I can,
well, most other movies I wait around. This one? I think I'd probably just leap at buying it. I might as well.
I love that I hem and haw over the, like, I don't know, $30 for Dune 2. But then I go to the AMC and I buy two tickets, two popcorns, two drinks, a popcorn bucket, the large Slimer cup, and I'm in for like $150. I'm like, no problem.
No problem.
It's economics.
It's an experience.
Yeah.
That happens once.
Yeah.
And if I want it to happen twice, I have to spend another $150.
It happens. But
hey, it's a complete mystery about why theaters are having to rethink their futures.
I did see
mystery.
Our AMCs are doing DoorDash for all the concessions. Like, if you're watching the movies at home, they want you to still buy their popcorn so you can do a DoorDash delivery of the movie theater popcorn and the drinks and stuff. That's actually kind of brilliant.
I guess,
but
unless the price makes sense, because guess what? Their popcorn and my popcorn, not that different.
And then you got the delivery charge and the tip on top. I mean, I don't
know. Wow.
Who knows? But that's neither here nor there.
I mean, if the guy shows up at the door with some sort of like one of those compressed air popcorn cannons and just fires it into your mouth, sure.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm going to watch Ghostbusters Frozen Empire from the comforts of my home next week, probably. I'm going to DoorDash AMC to get another popcorn bucket shaped like a ghost trap. I'm going to have it delivered to my house, and I'm going to get the full experience one more time. But so stay tuned to that. I think that's really going to help you in my discussion on things. It's certainly going to help me on my score analysis, because I keep coming to parts where I'm like, I wish I could just rewatch the movie and hear and see things with my, you know, all my senses again. But so stay tuned on there. But this week, Chris, this is your brilliant idea of a discussion topic, and I'm very excited about it. So I just kind of want to dive into it.
Don't be so surprised I had one. I have
you
them from
have
time to time.
You have excellent ideas. You have excellent Thanks. From time to time.
I do. I do appreciate that.
This is so. I'm thinking of the best like headline title of the episode, but the questions that we still have after watching Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the things that we did not see, the things that we wish that they would explore, the things that we are interested in seeing.
Loose ends. Let's call them loose ends.
Yeah, we want to kind of point towards some of the loose ends that we are interested in exploring. In the way that Ghostbusters Back in Town is giving us that little bit of needle and thread to help us sew together post-afterlife into Frozen Empire. Even then, there are still some things within that the holes, the gaps between Back in Town and Afterlife that I'm curious to see what happened. You know what? Hey, what happened after everybody had that hot cocoa and maybe put some rum in it? Like, what was the discussion around the Spangler farmhouse? How did Venkman react to that house? That kind of thing. Like, so what you and I are going to do is for the next like 45 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about those specific things that you and I would like to see. And I know you've pulled research. I saw your Twitter post that you were in the Secret Studio North Library with your rolling ladder and all of the accoutrement. I'm very jealous of that. But I'm going to let you start. What's one of those threads that we still haven't seen? The unseen corner.
Okay. Well, this kind of grew out of, well, two things. One, the comic series, because the comic series is filling in a rival in New York to the start of Frozen Empire. And then I started going, like you said, it doesn't really fill in much between the end of Afterlife to the start of the comic series. And I mean, part of that is just the boring, we're going to New York. But, you know, you start... your brain starts wandering to, well, what was the conversation that Winston had with him that led to them him saying, you can, you know, Firehall is yours, or as you say, right after the events of Afterlife, what did everybody have to say about, hey, we saved the day again, and who are you guys? Egon's kids? Okay. Then, you know, stuff like that. So there was that, and then... you know, I started thinking about the fact that one of those things that fits into that gap is somebody's going to have to talk a bit more about the Ray Egon schism.
The fallout, whatever that, yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. And then from there, it just kind of tumbles. So where do I want to start?
Well, can we go back to the Ray and Egon?
Yeah.
So you and I have talked about it.
I think that's the biggest one.
Yeah. And I know that a lot of people bumped on that. In fact, I just browsing GB fans earlier this week saw that there is still discussion about like that didn't ring true to me. And you kind of want to say, look, people change. Like I know in movies, everybody is this archetype that has this amazing, you know, beginning, middle and end. And they stay true to their class and their affiliation and stuff. But people do change. Like I have had the greatest of friends, the closest of friends that I just have fallen out of touch with, or one or two things have happened and there immediately was a rift. You know, and that happens. That's what happens in life.
Yeah.
So again, I know that Egon and Ray were simpatico in our head canon, in what we think the expanded universe of Ghostbusters leading up to the 1984 film was, the two of them were just inseparable and they helped Peter through college and all the things that we kind of just like accept from the novelization is true. But the people that are like, you know what, like Ray would never not believe Egon. That's true in the sense of when you're watching Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, that's right. Absolutely. But
right. So you've hit on where the, I don't know what you want to call it, retro speculation starts coming in. So what is the time period between the end of Ghostbusters 2 and the Egon Ray split?
And it's got to be soon.
It has to be pretty substantial. If he goes off and becomes known as, you know, the old man, the dirt farmer and all that in this out of the way town sort of thing.
Well, does the rift occur when, so there's the whole, like a ghost hasn't been sighted here in 30 years. So it's like, and then he says that, you know, some say we did our job too. Venkman said we did our job too. The well dried up. I thought the schism happened then. I thought that's when there's the fallout. And then he starts going crazy. He's talking about all this stuff about the cyclical. Okay.
Yeah, no, in my head, it's the literal point whereby which Egon goes, they're not listening and they don't believe me. I have to, but I still have to do something about it.
He grabs the stuff and leaves. Okay.
Leaves. Yeah. Right. So you're right. Like that leaves. So, and then, okay. So then this is where my brain just spirals out of control, but that's just the wonderful part about this whole thing. You know, loving Ghostbusters and being able to stare at it forever until patterns emerge. It took 5 years between first movie and second movie for things to die down. And again, they did their job too well, or what? Or is it just that the model works best when there's a rise, like a big bad on the rise that tends to spike activity, because that's what the first two movies were. And in between, when they had solved the big bad and everything crashes. So let's assume it takes 5 years after Ghostbusters 2 to reach the break point. And that's not an insubstantial period of time to have a few more ghost stories, for example, you know, solve a few more things. Egon continues to look into his research. starts to gain, you know, kind of new thoughts and insights, has, you know, his studies have turned up more that he's concerned about when it comes to, you know, Gozer and all that. So what with the 89, so 94?
Yeah, okay. I would buy that. So you have a good 5 solid years of storytelling there that we have no idea what happens from.
Which means, yeah, which makes then a roughly 25-year break between the schism, as I just outlined it, and Afterlife. And I'll tell you right now, kids, where you're standing, 25 years is kind of an abstract. If you stop, like you get older and you look back 25 years, that's a chunk of time, especially when two people aren't really talking to one another and all that. So,
but that's what I think Zedmore Industries would require to build up this financial enterprise, that whatever Winston does, that he's, you know, built up the company from one employee himself to a thriving global enterprise.
Yeah, exactly. 25 years to become an international is not bad, especially if the ghostbusting business tanks within 5 years, roughly, let's just say the shape of 5 years. And, you know, Winston's got to work. Winston can't turn to lean on academia to kind of fill like in the Peter blanks, did. Which is like Peter did, like Egon did. The bookstore is not there, which was Ray's fallback, right? When things were slow, Ray had the book. There's always money in the psychic banana stand. And
the psychic banana stand, like
banana
it.
Stand. And so he's got a, you know, so again, another perfect story. That must have been like just a bittersweet but amicable parting.
Yeah.
Guys, it's been great, but there's no bit. But at the same time, he leaves with this thing in the back of his head of, but remember, he's seen some shit that'll turn you white. That's a guy that got something stuck in his head who is now going to think about it for a while. And yeah, so then 25 years, let's just say it's a gradual tick over. So he gets going within his first, 10 years after Ghostbusters 2, he started to make a go of his own thing. He's got enough spare bandwidth to retain the lease, you know, or on the fire hall. You know, he gets to 15, 20 years. He's got enough that he's got some more brains, because everything that we saw in the lab, that didn't pop up overnight before Frozen Empire started. And actually, Frozen Empire would be 30 years by that point. So he's got like at least 5 or 10 years of that research lab up and running and maintaining things and building out, you know, the mega containment unit and stuff like that. So that's
true. So there's like 2 years gap in between Afterlife and Frozen Empire, right? Is that kind of what Back in Time outlines, that there was a 2 year?
Like, I guess that's true. Yeah.
So there is time for Winston to like put money into the, buy the aquarium, start building up the secret clandestine,
pardon me, I got a niche I had to scratch there.
The lab, that's all right. They won't see it. It's audio. It's fine.
I know, but it's funny to explain in an audio podcast that you're having to stare at me, scratch my back while we do a podcast.
Honestly, I just got the alert that the new Pearl Jam album is released on Apple.
So you're
I
was looking super at that, distracted.
And I wasn't looking at you itching. It's fine. Yeah. Okay, guys, fine. We take podcasting very seriously here.
Very seriously.
Very seriously.
So rewind back. The Peter Dana story that continued on. We don't know anything about it. Ray, you know, basically falls back to Ray's occult. We're kind of familiar with the Ray's occult idea from the start of Ghostbusters 2, but that guy's got a lifetime of running a shop about weird stuff that sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, like, we're assuming that Ray fell back on the bookstore, but like, what if Ray, again, knowing that people change, what if he was so burned out on everything? And what if he was so hurt by his friend stabbing him in the back and taking all of this stuff and running? What if he did something else? Like, what if Ray went on some vision quest somewhere? Because that seems like a Ray Dan Aykroyd thing kind of that would happen.
There's room for that and Ray's a cult. But here's the other thing. So stop for a second. The library calls him in because they have a weird ghost thing. What did the guys do? They went down. They saw it. They peed their pants and left. That does not seem like the kind of thing that's you were told never to come back, right?
So like, there's more there. There's
so yeah. I and how does he know Hubert Wartsky, Dr. Hubert Wartsky?
Yeah.
He knows Dr. Hubert Wartsky. So I contend that potentially there's room there that Ray and the library did some more stuff, probably involving Wartsky and all that, like the guy who deals with the weird books and the weird stuff. So, yeah. Or, you know, maybe it could be the telling of the ghost is still here. Can you come do something about it? And, you know,
but he's one just guy by himself. That he hasn't gotten the ghost. The library one guy ghost by has not been yeah. seen.
Well, you know, Peter's wandered off. Winston's gone off. Egon's gone off. Ray comes back, the one guy with an interest in the cult, no access to proton packs. Maybe him and Wartsky attempt a slightly messier way yeah. to get rid of a ghost, and something goes sideways, and that's why Delacour is like, don't you come back around here no more. So there's that. That's the big thing, is the gap between Ghostbusters 2 and Afterlife. So many questions
yeah.
about each individual character. Some of the larger interactions, like Egon and Ray, and then to a much more nebulous degree, because I don't think it fits necessarily in between. We haven't really. You and I talked about this before. We're not sure the time frame about Egon and his family, but that's still completely up in the air.
Yeah.
We know nothing about the timeline or what the. Don't know who mom is. That's a bit of a cliffhanger, right? Like, there's a story to be told there.
And may not necessarily be something that needs to be told, but could be a story. Like, that's one of those things that's like, that could be something.
I don't think any of these things need to be told, but they are technically loose threads.
Yeah.
By their very definition, they're an unfinished piece of business.
And are great storytelling. Like, if Ray, I think you hit something right on the head there, too, that I've just been fascinated with is, like, Egon bails and he takes the fuel isotope and he takes the packs and he takes the Ecto-1. Ghostbusting was Ray's life, much in the way that it was Winston's, and he gets nostalgic toward it at the end of Afterlife, saying, you know, I was always a Ghostbuster. But when Ray realizes that he can't do this without Egon, and Egon has gone off the rails
yeah.
and stolen all of their stuff, and like that right there, I'm like, that is a story. That is something. And I know that people will have difficulty seeing a hero of theirs, seeing Ray Stantz, the heart of the Ghostbusters, kind of lose faith, kind of lose his heart, kind of having to like pick himself back up and dust himself off. But that's good storytelling, man. Like, there's something there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something. But
You don't get a good story with no conflict. And while it's great to have them be best buds at certain points, you don't get a good story if... like if there isn't something going on to kind of I mean they're the two at the core, right? And
yeah.
So and actually the best thing there is to then start loping backwards between Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2. That's 5 years of ghostbusting stories there. Sure, things died down, but they didn't necessarily entirely go away.
And they're dealing with the same bureaucracy that's happening in Frozen Empire. They've got lawsuits for property destruction and damage, endangering the public, whatever you know their crimes against New York City were. They're dealing with that. Yeah.
Right. And so there's that. Okay. So between the two movies, second movie at Afterlife, Afterlife to comic. Comics going to fill in its bit, and then Frozen Empire. Yeah, the only part that's left then, and this, I leave this one to the end of where my brain kind of got to, which is, nope, sorry, there was more. Sorry, this is not the end. This is the end of the Ghostbusters thread, and it is the, we've talked about it before. Like all things, I think there's something to be told there, but I agree with you. I don't think it necessarily has to be told, and it's Dan Aykroyd's favorite idea that we can see how they met.
Ghostbusters High, the one that he always comes back to. It's like high school Ghostbusters.
We talked about this before. I think you could do a multi-season storyline whereby Egon and Ray meet up at the end of high school, like literally right at the end of high school. Potentially, like, I don't know. One of them is the weird kid that comes for the senior year, is the new kid, and also in his senior year at the school, meets the other slightly weird kid with an interest, and they can get into some no proton pack.
Becomes sort of like ghost stories, you know. Maybe that's the end for like young adults. Like maybe that's a series for young adults where it's just these high school kids.
Yep.
Supernatural, yeah. Running around trying to find chasing ghost stories.
But done smart, it can also fill out the characters of the two characters and set things up, like why did they get together to become Ghostbusters? Why did they split later on? Like stuff like that. Like, because the thing is we have very high level understandings of their characters. We have no under the hood understanding of their characters.
I mean, did you? There's a little twinkle in Dan Aykroyd's eye in Frozen Empire when he's talking. Ray is talking to Phoebe, and he talks about there were Ghostbusters before us, you know. Like, and there's that little glimmer in his eye when he's starting to talk about the Fire Masters and stuff like that. The whole copper and brass discussion sort of stems from that. But
So imagine in high school they find the strange old man in the old house that the kids called haunted, who has been in his own way, Vigoing around busting ghosts. By the way, there's a whole other episode where, going back to our discussion about the science behind the Ghostbusters universe and its magic and its ghosts is all energy based. I went off on a real bad shower thought tangent where it was like, a fire master implies all other energy form masters. So, you know, thermal, infrared master, as in cold, like
plasma
radiation, right? Like just, okay, stop, go away. But
can we go back to you using Vigoed as a verb?
Yeah, absolutely. Vigoing like around.
Just Vigoing around.
Well, see, and this leaps off of the Ghostbusters line and goes to one of the three other loose threads. One is this concept of the Fire Masters. I think there's a great story there. Are there others? Like, as a family line expands, is there more than one Fire Master, or is it this, there is only one? And if there's only one, it's kind of weird. Like, how did they end up in New York, and how was he not prepared for this, right?
Well,
like,
yeah, or are there other cultures that have Ghostbusters that are of similar
that
kind
have
of
their equivalents, right? Yeah. Also then there's things like, so the Adventurers Club and Ivo Shandor and the Gozerian cultists and all that, they do make room for that concept of the weird old professor in the house that the kids call haunted and dare each other to go knock on the door, who is already, and again, perfect way to explain how we go from Ray and Egon are kids, and what does that mean? To how do they turn into a super excitable and, you know, enthusiastic, interest in the occult, and the other one gets, who's probably very smart, well, I mean, obviously very smart, very scientific mind, and gets really fixated and dialed in on the idea of what is the science? And the thing is how did they get there? Like, so this idea of end of high school to university where they know the, because that'd be great, a season or two of end of high school, senior year, second season is start of university, and that last half of that, I think we talked about this in another episode, because in my head it was like, and then they run into that one kid who's kind of snotty to them sort of thing, but super charismatic and is kind of swanning around the whole thing and ends up getting lumped into them. And remember, Ghostbusters Peter is not a believer.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic that there's this room to go from high school with the two of them to university with the three of them to how do they manage to then two of them become really big on this idea, and then they get through, well, they're doctorates, so we're looking at 6+ years. Egon's smart, so let's just say he's super dialed in and all that. But the point is that they get to the end of it, they're doctors, and Peter still not sold on the idea, right? Like, so you get to have this great storytelling of three people that have come together. One of them who is cool enough to operate on his own. Why did he pick up these two weird stray puppies, right? Like,
you know,
why is he, especially when he doesn't believe what they're doing?
It's so funny. Like, the way that you're describing it right now, it's like my mind immediately went to like a serialized episodic television type thing.
Right.
But the way you just described it, like, I want it to be a fat Stephen King novel. Like, that's the novelization that leads up
Here's the thing. Yes. There is, if, and I know film and television is a much harder prospect. The fact that we are not getting a steady string of books out of these gaps we're talking about kind of baffles me.
Yeah.
Especially right now when there's so many great, like, horror comedy, horror science fiction authors out there who provided Ghost Core acts as the IP. I was going to say the IP core, but then that's two different uses and spellings of the word core, and it's just confusing.
You
core cores.
You got to work your core.
The core. Ghost Core is the core of the Ghost Core core. A Ghostbuster core. They provided that there's guidance to this is what is, or they vet. So if somebody comes in and so say we go back to the youngin Ghostbusters. And somebody, you know, you find that right smart author and they, you know, you have this conversation that you and I are just having with them. And then they go away with that assignment. And they understand the assignment and they come back with the thing. And Ghost Core is there to go, yes, no, maybe, right?
Yeah.
Tweak. And that, so that every book that comes out is not done in the void like The Return was. A great, fun book. Only novelization, like only outside of the movie novelization we never got. Wildly divergent from reality
and the nice thing
as we
about,
understand it.
Yeah, and like prose books, they could also, because I can already hear the studio notes, so to speak, of like, okay, young Ghostbusters, it's not interesting because they don't have proton packs, they don't have ghost traps, and they're not capturing the ghosts. Like, they are Ghostbusters, but they're not busting ghosts. I don't get it. So, right. But within a prose novel, you could frame things or interject things with the present day so that they're maybe things tie together, or maybe they are explaining
That's
the rift
true.
Between Rey and Egon and
right.
the things that so only you, novels yeah. can do. I
right.
want
so
that.
That's actually
that's what I want
to
hear.
That's really powerful to be able to tie, you know, the how they met with how they stayed together prior to Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah.
To or you know to tell more stories of say between the two movies, tied into after the second movie, right? Like, and then from there's so much room to tell the tale. And frankly, given the way things are, the reality of, you know, the loss of Harold Ramis and all that, maybe doing it in a book is the only way to fill in the blanks about, you know, the early Spengler family saga. So, but yeah, that's kind of, I think that's all the loose ends I had. I mean, I know there's other ones where there's very soft ones like, you know, where did Slimer come from? What's Alice's story? Stuff like that. It's like, the ghosts don't necessarily need, actually, and we've talked about this before, I don't know if explaining the ghosts is as much fun as people think it's going to be. Like,
yeah, I think you want some mystery there, because I think the paranormal has to have a certain inherent amount. Like, the more you explain about what a ghost is, where it came from, how it's created, like, it starts to lose that, you know, what makes the unknown, what makes the paranormal interesting is the fact that we don't know much about them, the fact that it is a mystery, the fact that it is a curiosity that we have to investigate and may or may not exist, or, you know, it's...
Yeah, there's some picking and choosing to be done, because I think there is room to tell, like, one of these prose novelization back and forth stories that is, you know, one half Ghostbusters and one half Vigo in the past sort of thing. Like, there's, I don't know, there's, anyways, the trick is there are holes, and you can kind of speculate a lot of different stuff into those holes. But my point was, like I said, I ended up kind of in this, like, the questions left hanging that really bugged me. Things like the Spengler, the mystery of the Spengler family is kind of hanging over there. I'm 100% on board with you that I think it makes perfect sense that Rey and Egon had their split up, given the, you know, the way things that were loosely described playing out. And then that leads to a lot of soft stuff that I'd like to know the answers to. What happened between the two movies? How did they get to the first movie? What's going on with all these, you know, 1800s, 19th century cultists and magician adventurers vegoing around the planet? Sorry.
Can we trade? I like that. Like, what are you doing?
Stop trying to make Vigo happen.
I'm just Vigoing around, man.
Vigo is not a verb. stop trying to make Vigo a verb.
You're so Vigo.
But, yeah. What I love about it is it operates much the same way as when we used to speculate about what we thought an upcoming movie was going to have in it, right?
Like, yeah.
Once there's a loose framework that, you know, it starts begging questions. What happened here in this space? It's really fun to get into that. And I think some of them would just be really excellent stories. Like, I know people are like, they're unhappy with the idea of two best Buster buds having a falling out. For me, that would be an incredible story, especially since we know how that story ends, which is horribly bittersweet. But, you know,
part of me, it's like, I don't want to see them struggle. I don't want to see them have a falling out. I don't take pleasure in seeing that hurt happen.
Yeah.
But the stuff that leads up to that too, like, you know, we know that the Ghostbusters thrived after 1989, at least for a little bit again. They got the key to the city. The city loved them. Everything was hunky-dory, except for all of the destruction that is detailed in the news thing at the beginning of Frozen Empire that the Statue of Liberty caused. So they were at least beloved enough to be doing birthday parties at the beginning of Ghostbusters 2. Like, kids love them. Like, one of the things that just cracks me up is, like, there was I think it was on a Reddit thread. Somebody was very upset that at the beginning of Frozen Empire, it showed all of the stuff from our childhoods as being real, as being things that happened in the context of the film.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking back to the beginning of Ghostbusters 2, when Ghostbusters were a fad, that they were doing birthday parties for kids.
Yeah.
And they show up and they're already the dead fad in 1989. So it's like, that they could have been a huge blip on the radar from 1985 to 1987, 88-ish, and then they became
Ghostbusters.
Passe.
Ghostbusters 2 completely set up the idea that their quote-unquote flash in the pan fandom in the New York area in 84 or 85 led to a corker of a top of the chart pop song. And once that's done, and we talked about it, they were very smart with it. They didn't show the action figures, which would confuse things with the toy real Ghostbusters. They never mentioned the real Ghostbusters. They just showed off the role play toys, which is a thing kids would love to have, the cereal. But again, that 1 year where Ralston made it and it was called Ghostbusters cereal versus, you know, the General Mills ones later on that were, you know, the real Ghostbusters or what have you.
That's what really starts to break your noodle. Because if you start thinking about the real Ghostbusters saying that the movie was based on them, so if the real Ghostbusters is the real thing that happened, then, maybe that does ring true. Maybe the animated version, it's kind of like a Lower Deck Strange New Worlds thing in Star Trek terminology here. Like, the animated version is the real version. And that's why canon is such a tough thing to, like, this is canon, this is not canon. Like,
no, this is not canon. The best you can do is as long as it doesn't contradict itself. That's when canon is at its best, is when it does not interfere with the explanation of something else. That's why comics have such trouble, because they pump out so much content, and if they're not careful, they're going to trip over, you know, and they've been going for so long, they'll trip over themselves all over the place.
And then good storytelling, too. Like, all the things that you and I are talking about, like, yes, they would expand the, and I'm doing air quotes for all the audio people, canon. But it's good storytelling, and that's always what comes first. Like, that's, you know, I know, especially when it comes to, like, Star Wars and Marvel and all of these big, long-running franchises now, They start by blue-skying things. They say, what is the story here? What is the character that we want to explore? Yeah. And don't let the canon weigh you down right now. We'll figure that out if we have to retroactively. We just want to tell a good story because that's what it's boils down to.
Well, you hit on an interesting idea, and that's that, yeah, what is the core thread and what is the cool stuff that we can bring in? So the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which for all intents and purposes has to operate on its own. It's movies. Movies are going to have to be made a certain way. It will not be as smooth and consistent with the comics. They tried that with the TV shows. It was kind of corny, so let's not worry about that. They do these movies, and then it became things like, here is what... So one of the things that the Marvel movies, as to give you an example, is they slid things around a lot based on the realities of the cool stories they wanted to tell from entirely different runs in the comics. Design got pulled a lot from all over the place. Like, you know, some of that early Thor costuming and all that was Ultimate Thor stuff. It's all about what things you bring together. How do I put this? Like,
it's kind of,
go ahead.
I always go to analogies, which I know I probably shouldn't because that's the weakest form. But it is. it's people making the same dish but using different recipes, different ingredients, pulling ingredients from other recipes in to kind of tailor things to their own thing. It's like we all know how to make a chocolate cake. However, how many variations on a chocolate cake are there? And none of those are the only way to create a chocolate cake. You know, that's kind of how I think it should be looked at.
Ghostbusters 2 enters the idea of Ray's occult. Great idea. It's back in the new movie, functioning much the same way. Spirits Unleashed, great idea. You know, Ray with his half glasses and the sweater in Ray's occult. For game purposes, make it right next door. So on the one hand, you're like, so that game universe doesn't necessarily mesh well.
Right.
But you can kind of see that you don't want to call it a multiverse thing, or is it? But just, it's more of a just relax for a minute. What was the cool thing that they overlapped into, sort of? It
allowed you to be able to go to Ray's occult in the game without having to hop in the car, hop on the subway, go in.
Bog things down
It was a shortcut. You're absolutely right. It's like, so is Ray's occult canon next to the firehouse? Well, no, but it helped in the environment that you were in for that particular thing. So
let's go back to 2009, because I think way back when you and I were talking about this a little bit. I know I talked about it when Proton Charging was actually a functioning website. For example, it made perfect sense as a video game to level up the packs, to build out what they could do. What did that mean to the continuity of things? Well, at the end of the day, nothing that shows up in that video game really meshes well with the movie run. But between it and, I guess Spirits Unleashed came out after Afterlife. But Afterlife was kind of the old stuff. So yeah, so I'll include Spirits Unleashed in this discussion as well. Those two set it up so that by the time we got to the Frozen Empire, the engineering lab was building out new proton packs with new gear. Like, so what are we up to now? Like, I can't even – where are the prop heads? How many different thrower types are we up to now, honestly, right? I think there's room for – don't try to get too rigid about lots of stuff, but just stick to the main. If we keep the movies as a main thread, it doesn't matter what else comes out. It can kind of all, you can feel it in the main line, right? If there's a good idea in one, even though that story. So what was the other game? Sanctum of Slime. One of the first, or potentially the first time we ever moved away from the Ecto. And into some sort of heavier vehicle sort of thing.
Yeah.
And now we're running around with panel vans, right? Like, it's or again, the first example of more than the original Ghostbusters. And now we're just living in a world where this will be the expectation. It's going to be beyond the original Ghostbusters from now on. Yeah. There are other people filling roles, sort of thing.
And there's stuff we probably haven't seen still. Like, there is that sort of veil of secrecy that's over all the stuff that Winston is doing, to the point that Janine even kind of jokes about it. Yeah, there's secret Ghostbuster stuff going on you don't know about. You know, that, like, she makes it sound like it's ridiculous, but it's actually true. You know, there is a bunch of secret stuff that they don't know about. What else is he working on?
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned Janine, too, because this is a thought I was having, was that the story in between the Ray Egon breakup and Afterlife, there's a lot of great room there for, how do I put this? It's not like they were completely separated that whole time. Because Janine was obviously aware of where Egon was, because she mentioned in Afterlife that, because he wasn't paying attention of it, the bills were coming in and she was just getting them covered, sort of thing.
And still when she says care of him till the end,
she was getting covered. It's like, well, where's that money coming from? Well, now there's a sense that probably Winston's little side slush fund that's starting to, you know, get this lab up and running and secure the original containment unit as a dangerous spot. By the way, nobody apologized to Peck for that. They did kind of create a hazard on site. But anyways, so if you want a great story, if you want to tell the story leading up to the schism, you can also deal with that time in between. Like, imagine the story where, you know, it's not like Ray was cut out of all the stuff that Janine and necessarily Winston are up to, too. But like you say, brokenhearted, just kind of doing his own thing or moping around in Ray's occult and all that. But, you know, imagine, for example, that he wanders to the firehouse one day, or Winston calls him to the firehouse one day or brings him to the lab or something like that. He's still, you know, a founder slash probably an officer of the company, of the corporation, sort of thing. And he's wandering around the lab. They know him. Like, he swanned into it in Frozen Empire. Nobody batted an eyelash. He was completely not surprised. He was familiar with what was going on there. Imagine that, you know, he's not in the loop, sort of thing. And one of the lab rats is kind of like, oh, we have a shipment heading out to Oklahoma, you know, to whatever. It's some innocuous intern or whatever spills the beans. I need this thing signed before FedEx can ship it out to Oklahoma. And Ray realizes that, you know what I mean? Like, so, and then it turns into Janine and Winston are not fully invested in what Egon's got going on, but they're at least invested to keep Egon keeping on.
Yeah.
And then
we've all got that one buddy that we know is down on their luck, and you're like, okay, here, I'll wire you some money. Are you okay? You know,
But here's the, and so imagine that you are longtime friends and stubborn, and you now know what he's up to, and he's doing something. You still maybe haven't bought in, or maybe you can't get past the hurt or the mad about the breakup, sort of thing. But at the same time, this kid's, and you could blow up, you could go to Janine, what the heck's going on, Winston, demand answers or whatever. But suddenly he realizes where his friend is, what his friend is up to, and takes the clipboard from the kid, signs it and hands it back, and then just goes on. Can still be mad, can still be stubborn about it. But he had that one moment of Egon's out there doing his own thing and didn't make a fuss. He kept that, whatever that tenuous thing was. So from where he's sitting, he's looking at it. Maybe he's watching Janine and Winston just take care of their loopy little friend and whatever he's doing out in Oklahoma, whatever. But he's still his best friend, you know, old time friend and all that. So like I say, you don't have to. And for all those people that are like, it makes no sense, sort of thing. It was like, well, there's a little bit that, again, humans are complicated, but even with the horrible breakup and the hurt feelings and all that, still his bestest bud and all that. Like, that's kind of what I like about these loose threads. Some of the side ones, like, I think Gozer, I'd love to know more about Ivo Shandor, because I think the idea of a mad architect, that's just such a great Lovecraftian idea. That's obviously why Aykroyd and them came up with it in the first place. That'd be a great story. Tell us more about that, please.
That would also be another like great novel for the people. Yes. Like when you look at the your Star Wars, your Star Treks, your things right. that have these long-standing novels. Like, yeah, if you want to do an Evo Shandor novel, that's the best place to do it, man, because it may not... Like, I know everybody wants that big, dark, spooky movie about Shandor, but...
Yeah.
But maybe that's where that novel comes in, too.
A series of novels, because, again, the line that Rey had, that there were Ghostbusters before us...
Yeah.
Again, it's not like they operated in a void. Like Rey operates a shop that is filled with books filled with the same stuff that our universe is filled with, which is, you know, the idea of court magician John Dee and stuff like that. Like the world has magic, sort of thing. So why can't you just do that? Why can't you have a series where, you know, why can't you set up a noir Sherlock Holmes versus Moriarty story in some occultishly adjacent, you know, 30s Private Dick or whatever, and his Gal Friday sidekick or whatever, you know, trying to unmask and figure out what's going on with Ivo Shandor. And then the best part is his story's over. Like, you can literally tell that you can end the series with how they busted him up enough that he retreated to Oklahoma to try to set up this other thing. And it never really got off the ground for whatever reason.
Shandor, or maybe that's where Ghostbusters story.
Ghostbusters story. The Adventurers Club. Steal a Mike Mignola and just hire all of his side artists that are doing all those not Hellboy comic books, almost entirely set in the same period as the Adventurers Society, where a bunch of Victorian Edwardian era guys are running around the world dealing with occult things. It's like, yes, do more of that. Yeah. That would be great.
It's kind of...
And then again, yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that is its own blank canvas that can be filled in wonderfully without even getting near the main Ghostbusters. But I do think there's I know a lot of people don't like the idea of kid Ghostbusters. I like the idea that we find out more about how they became the people we ran into at the start of Ghostbusters 1. Again, we've talked about this before. Great story, great characters, breaks every known convention of film storytelling. Like, we got nothing on who these people were before the movie. Nothing. And they were them the entire movie and changed... Not a bit. Like that is a huge head scratcher. I would absolutely love to know how Rey became a Rey, how Egon became Egon. Like, how did a super scientist brain become fixated on the supernatural? And how did a kind of a let's be honest here, Rey is Dan Aykroyd. How did a Dan Aykroyd you know, hook himself up with the guy who had these crazy ideas about the science beneath the mystery sort of thing.
Right.
And then if you really want to scratch your head, how did this womanizing, charming, you know, cool kid, you know, too cool for school kid, like, how did he hook up with them? And I mean, the obvious one is he's like, hey, nerds, help me get through school. Why did he stick around with them? Like, what?
Yeah. What kept him?
Was it just easy academia? And then at the end of it, but there's got to be something else, because when they got kicked out of school and Egon and you know, and they actually do go see a ghost, he's, you know, it's not like he headed for the hills. They saw one ghost. Like, he must have had, there must be some foundation to Peter Venkman and his connection to the other two that, I don't know. Like I said, there's... I know people don't like that idea. I know I think the problem there is that it got thrown around as Ghostbusters meets Stranger Things. I don't think it's that at all. I think it's more accurate.
Well, and Dan Aykroyd sold it as, like, you know, Ghostbusters with dynamite. And like, whoa, no, sir. But, you know, that writer for The Atlantic just listened to everything we talked about, too, and was like, there should not be lore in Ghostbusters. It's not that kind of a movie.
Hang on a sec. I gotta lean away from the mic. You ready? That was my giant that was my giant raspberry to the guy writing for The Atlantic there. Doesn't have to be lore. Yes, there. Well, no, technically, there doesn't have to be anything. We don't have to have movies. No more movies, please.
We don't have to have storytelling. We don't need to know. We don't need to know about characters we need to care about. Whatever. It's the Atlantic.
And next, we're going to get rid of music and dancing.
The periodical known for overthinking things is making fun of things for overthinking things. So we've spent a good 50-some minutes talking about the schism. Yeah. Honestly, like that's a main kind of crux here in our storytelling.
It's the main one. Yeah.
A couple of the things that I know. So the Spengler family, like there's a lot of loose threads and things there that I'm sure we'll be learning about probably in the Dark Horse comics, this series or the next series, I guess the series that's coming after this.
I would love that.
So that I think will be well covered. There's one place that I've always kind of wanted to dip into because there is a passage of time in the original Ghostbusters movie during the montage.
Yeah.
That is sort of an undefined period of time. You know, it's the Ghostbusters have their rising star. How fast, how slow is that rising star? We don't quite know. Certainly a passage of time because like he's wooing Dana Barrett and he's still looking into her case and there's all these things happening. So it could be a couple months. It could be a year. Right. It could be a couple weeks. I have no idea, but that period of time that happens in the montage, I want to know more about because that's when more things are happening.
Those are two, both there's, you know, and in the second movie, there are those dead spots where they got back to work and we saw snippets of it. But the thing is like, so in the first montage, the first montage has the Chinatown ghost, them driving a lot. Fort Detmering, running out of the basement, you know, Ray, I got it, all that sort of thing.
Running through Rockefeller. Was there an ice skating thing that happened there? Yeah.
And then ends with them talking about how overworked and exhausted they are. Well, we obviously didn't see a lot of ghost busting then. And actually, here's the thing. We talked about the rose-colored glasses that people talk about now. There wasn't enough busting ghosts in the new movies. Like, you have forgotten how little busting there was in all of the movies.
That's true. There was implied ghost busting, and there's a lot of implied ghost busting in Frozen Empire.
A lot of it. But that's the best part. This is where you could make it up. We can take that implied, and it can be expanded out to tell us a ton of Ghostbuster stories. And actually, that's the beauty of it. Yeah, actually, you want to start doing books? Start there.
Yeah.
Because we have the first movie, we have the second movie. We know how the first movie starts and we know how the second movie ends. And they're perfect bookends. Happy start, happy end. And you can start telling stories set within the middle of those spots within the two movies and the 5 years in between. And it's very easy to keep those on track because the one informs the other. You cannot get out of sync with telling stories about the Ghostbusters in novel form because the movies tell you where you can and cannot go before you trip
those
over
are always your landmarks.
Details.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that'd be a great place to start filling. Why is my bookshelf not filled with Ghostbusters books?
I know. Let's get on that. Anyway.
Yeah.
So here's where you guys come in because there are a lot of loose threads. There are a lot of things to, I don't want to point to plot holes and things like the nitpicks and the things that you have issues with. I just want to know about the pure things that you are interested in the storytelling of hearing. Hit our voicemails, hit our social media, hit our emails, however you want to contact us. Because what I want to do is I want to come back to this and include your things that you would like to explore, things that are unanswered that you need to know about, and kind of dive into that too, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of overlap out there with everybody with your thoughts too. So, make sure call in, let us know. We want to hear.
Don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Go Stoppers.
I'm sorry, we'll do it again.
We want to hear from you. Leave us a voicemail on our call-in line at 470-242-4742. That's 4702-GBHQIC. We also have a Facebook page.
You do?
And Twitter accounts.
Fence is dead.
No kidding. Just give me the address.
Search Facebook for
the Ghostbusters Interdimensional Cross Trip.
On Twitter, look for Troy at Ghostbusters HQ and Chris at Proton Charger.
I just want to get back close again.
What the hell are you doing?
If you like what you hear, please take a moment to give us a review on iTunes. Be sure to recommend us to your friends.
That makes good sense. Don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals.
Once again, our call-in line is 4702-GBHQIC.
That'll do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
All right, well, there it was, the loose ends episode. Tying up loose. There's just one more thing. Maybe that's what the headline is going to be. I'm going to use a Columbo reference just for my own amusement.
Just one more thing, yeah.
For my papers, for all my reports, I got to tie up a few loose ends. I like this. I mean, and that's the thing that I really want to point that dummy at the Atlantic to, like, Look at the rich storytelling sandbox tapestry that there is here, and tell me that that's not something that it's like looking at the X-Files and saying, like, I don't need any lore in the X-Files. I'm like, sir, I beg to differ. Like, that's what made the X-Files very interesting.
Well, and here's the thing: the you mentioned the X-Files, the fact that the X-Files, Supernatural, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Probably more if we thought about it. The fact that those shows exist means somebody watched Ghostbusters and went, it'd be kind of cool to do more of that. Meaning there's Ghostbusters didn't tell enough. That one premise had so much potential and it wasn't rolling out fast enough and people just were inspired. Men in Black. I mean, there's been no bones about it where they were kind of like, yeah, Ghostbusters, but with aliens.
But with aliens.
Right? Yeah. Like, it's just...
Ivan Reitman did Ghostbusters with aliens, with evolution. Right. Like, you can tell that thought process is there.
It was just contrary and clickbait to say that there's no good reason to expect lore in a Ghostbusters. Like, he was just befuddled about why it has to be why it should be a franchise. It's like... because we haven't heard all the stories. That's what this episode is about. I spend my time in the shower going, what was that about? And what could it mean? Right? Like, meh.
I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right.
Well, Chris, you need to eat. So I want to make sure that happens soon. But do you have any final thoughts here?
Oh, good.
Oh, okay.
I scarfed. I scarfed. Oh, okay. But I got to eat before we recorded.
All right.
Final thoughts. It was a whole episode about final thoughts. So I don't know that I technically have a final thought. Actually, my final thought is, can we just have some books, please? Books, please.
Yes, that's a good final thought.
Books, please, now.
My final thought, I would like to point everybody toward our good friends at Yes Have Some. This past weekend, they released their final Firehouse Fridays video of them visiting the sets and visiting with the actors, and basically just we can live vicariously through them. They got to do all the cool stuff. Check those out if you haven't already, because they're just so much fun, and they really did a great job of pointing out a lot of details and stuff in the sets that we didn't really get to see in the film. Just shows the thought process that was there. And Adam Savage's videos too. Like, I know that you and I kind of buried our heads in the sand to avoid spoilers with those, but those are fantastic. They're amazing.
They've been
so
great.
Go check those out too. So
also shout out to Jim at Extraplasm there, because his last two or three episodes have been great. If you're wanting more Frozen Empire talk. He's had some great guests on to talk about it. And the last, I think this week's episode, well, not when this one drops necessarily, but as of this recording, with the creative team behind the comics.
Yes.
I haven't finished listening to that one, but it kind of perfect timing on the back of you and I, talking up the first issue there. So
yeah. And again, I know we said it quite a bit in our last episode, but don't let the art style bring you down.
No.
Like, it's a very different art style, and just enjoy it. And maybe they will explore other art options later, but like, just enjoy the storytelling. That's again what it all matters. What it all boils down to is the storytelling. And so
it was never going to be more of Dan and Eric.
There's only one Dapper Dan.
Yeah, but they, well, not only that though, but you know, another comic company was not going to pick up the creative team from the first run. They had an amazing run. I think it's a superlative run. Nobody will ever take that away from them. Nobody will ever argue otherwise. At that point, just put it aside and then try to come in with some fresh perspective on a new team going to tell the story. And I, like I said, the art one is a real weak thing to go after, because that style of art is a specific style. It's a minimalist style that is in a bunch of different great comics. So,
and also let's keep in mind. Sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
I was gonna say keep in mind our IDW friends that you want to be on this book are very busy. And rightly so.
Yeah.
They're working on, like, Eric is killing it with the Ninja Turtles Saturday morning series. Like, it is so good. So, you know, I'm sure they would not argue to come back, but I'm sure that they're also spread a little thin because they pour their heart and souls into what they're working on at the time. So
they told a lot of story too. So time for them to go, flex their creative brain muscles in some other passions. Come back later. Right? So.
All right. Well, next week, more CrossRip action. Maybe we'll be talking about a home video release. I'm hoping, fingers crossed. Ooh. Maybe we'll get some behind the scenes stuff there. Hopefully, I mean, usually when they do these VOD releases, you get all the bonus features in advance. But I don't know. We'll see. Until then, everybody, see you on the other side. Who you gonna call?
Thanks for joining the Ghostbusters Interdimensional CrossRip. Visit us at ProtonCharging.com, GhostbustersHQ.net, and StillPlayingWithToys.net.
That used to be one of my two favorite shows.
Everything you're doing is bad.
I just want to let you know that.
Really found its voice in the 46th episode.
Next week, though, Careless Pets. We're so cool.
You all stay Vigoing out there. Go Vigo around.
Keep on Vigoing.
Go Vigo yourself.
Vigo you Vigoing Vigo. delightful idiocy.